Queridos hermanos y hermanas, greeting I always use, as you know, and one I chose to use also about a week ago when I was talking to the National Council of Churches down in New Orleans for their annual meeting, and I thought of you again. Dear friends, here in this country, we don't have much experience of royalty. We may see pictures in the newspaper, on television, and more recently the story about the engagement of Prince William brings it all back into the public arena, but it's very distant as far as we're concerned, and remote from our daily thinking. That wasn't the case with our grandparents, who came to this country for freedom, came to this country for freedom from arbitrary, oppressive royalty, who imposed with authoritarian power the police to make sure that their rules were enforced. I don't know about your own family history. My grandpa came to this country about 1900 in order to escape the rule of the Austrian-Hungarian Emperor. He decided he did not want to spend a large part of his life in the army, which was used to control population in many different ways and many different levels. So he decided he wanted none of that, came here. But that experience of royalty is not within the radar of our daily experience most of the time. But the same reality that drove our grandparents or ancestors was true of the time of Jesus, only more so. The harsh, cruel, demanding, heavy taxes were imposed on people. Herod the Great, we talked about him last week as a marvelous architect, but just a brutal, brutal person in his own family. The one that tried to kill off infants in Bethlehem, however many there were. And that was also the case, the brutality of the Roman Emperor. Brooking absolutely no opposition or any kind of political unrest. There was a cruelty about that kind of kingship and royalty that people in the first century knew only too well. And the soldiers jeered at this pathetic figure nailed to a cross under the title of King of the Jews. They offered wine. It was the customary drug to reduce pain, but it also was a very ironic parody of the wine offered at royal feasts. This is what they did, and that little subtlety shouldn't be forgotten as we hear the story of Christ on the cross. The rulers of Jerusalem, the religious rulers of Jerusalem, didn't speak of a king. You heard it a moment ago. They were religious, and so they hated the Roman authorities. What they invoked was the Christ. They spoke of the Christ, that mysterious figure chosen by God, anointed for some service, prepared by God, empowered by God. This Christ figure would somehow set them free once and for all. They were convinced of it. They waited for it. For freedom from tyranny and foreign domination. Curiously enough, however, those religious authorities imagined the Christ in very similar profile to the kings. The Christ, anointed one, would have authority to control armies, they thought. Somehow bring victory over enemies and once and for all give them the freedom. But there was a military political aspect to this king that the religious leaders spoke about, this Christ. Again, curiously enough, they presumed both soldiers and religious leaders, they presumed that he would use this power for himself, for his own benefit. for his own relief. But that was something that Jesus rejected at the very beginning of his ministry. The first temptation in the desert was a suggestion that maybe he could turn stones into bread, because after all, he was hungry. He refused to do that. Refused to allow any kind of use of his own authority for self-serving purposes. All his power was for others, not for himself. He rejected signs of or suggestions of military, political, economic power. He wouldn't even answer them. He was silent. But to the criminal on the cross, to him he spoke. To him he offered words of forgiveness, promise of a new beginning, a fresh start with God forever, in paradise, and everything that those terms meant in the first century. The kingdom of this Christ was an instrument of God's compassion and forgiveness and mercy. A kingdom that was extended to the most unlovable people in the world. A kingdom offered to them because God loved them, and loved them into spiritual maturity. He not only spoke to sinners, this Christ, this anointed leader, chosen, sent by God, he hung on the cross beside them. We call this man the good thief, Dismas. But you know, Roman authorities, they didn't crucify thieves. In the brutality of that age, they simply cut their hands off. But they crucified leaders of unrest, rebellion. Those were the ones they wanted to make a public display of. Those who inspired uprising, who wanted to somehow be instruments for throwing off this hated oppression. I found myself in the course of the week thinking about such surprising, distant topics as the resistance movement in Europe under the Nazis. I mean, they were people who were summarily shot, executed publicly, on a random basis. 10 victims for one soldier who might have been killed in the uprising. So Dismas, while we may call him a good thief, or a thief in any score, was somehow involved in social movement. And I know that leads to some speculation about how he came to hang on the cross beside Jesus, and how Jesus hung beside him, not only speaking words of forgiveness, but dying beside him. Jesus made the two terms of King and Christ somehow a unit. He was anointed to change the whole notion of authority. He was anointed to make it service, not domination, to make it an instrument for the betterment of all of society, to care about the internal conversion, the spiritual maturity which produced leaders in society. He was helping people in his notion of kingship and anointed service, leadership, calling people to shape a society that would be just and to serve it. Catholics are not spiritualists. We're very much involved in the world, the temporal economic order. The gospel sends us to do that because there are consequences in the public square for what we believe. And then I thought of the rallying cry during the counter-revolution in Mexico. A century ago, it was Cristo Rey. Viva Cristo Rey. When one revolution threw off an authoritarian kingship, and then imposed a kind of atheistic, repressive, anti-clerical government. And the cry to overthrow that in turn was Viva Cristo Rey. And there were wonderful martyrs, lay people and priests and religious who died in their service to Cristo Rey, the change in society. It's a remarkable piece of history, very close to home. We shouldn't forget all of that when we come and celebrate this feast of Christ the King, and we look here in the cathedral and see this figure on the cross with the beginning of glory already shining. We just finished some elections here in our state. Perhaps the biggest casualty in so many of the arguments was truth. We need a society that's based on justice. We need a society that is willing and ready to help the poor and needy, the forgotten folks. A lot of money came in to talk about tax cuts, it seems. Didn't hear much talk about the poor, about violence, or about drug addiction in the suburbs as well as in our central city. So this Feast of Christ the King somehow calls us not only to recognize a new kind of authority, a moral authority that's very powerful, but also calls us to take a look at the world around us and to figure out how, as a result of our celebration of Christ the King, we can really work together because of our faith, work together to make the whole world a different and much more just and compassionate and truthful society. Viva Cristo Rey.